Amen.
My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations.
Are you not? Oh.
Knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience.
And that steadfastness has a full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing.
Yeah. So we didn't actually finish that first verse because it had one word in there that we didn't say anything about, and that was greeting. Greeting.
Oh.
In the first verse, after identifying who he's writing to, he says, greeting. And I noticed that when we came in the house here tonight. We were greeting each other, right? Yeah. Well, I caught that.
With charity.
With?
Charity. You greet us with charity.
Okay.
The same thing here, they greeted them with something to eat.
Well, greeting was an important thing when it came to the epistles, because you'll notice that every epistle, there is a salutation. There is a greeting. And this one is no exception. And with the same greeting, basically. Greeting them, hoping them the goodwill, and for the grace, peace, and mercy of God to be upon them. And a lot of these epistles have a greeting at the end of their book as well, which we're not so familiar with, but they are pretty common. And 1st and 2nd Corinthians, 1st Thessalonians, and 1st Peter all end with a salutation. And they all say the same thing, which is, greet one another
with a holy kiss.
With a holy kiss. Grandma always knows the answer. Yeah. And of course, that always brings me back to my experience in Germany. When I was preaching on the street there with the missions troop every Saturday. Never missed a Saturday. Of course, they never missed. And sometimes there would be others that would come and join them. You know, I was always there, but there were others that came occasionally. So, and every once in a while, there'd be some Russians. There were a lot of Christians from Russia in Germany. And one of the guys on that came regularly, Helmut Dreisbach, he had a special outreach to these Russians who came from Russia, Christians, and he would help them get jobs and get settled with homes, and if they wanted schooling, he did a lot of stuff for them. Plus, he had regular Bible studies and things like that. He did prayer meetings all the time with them. And so I got to know a lot of these Russian guys as well. But anyway, we were there standing as a group, and the Russian boys showed up. And this one Russian guy, this is in my mind, burned in my brain. I cannot ever forget. This Russian boy comes over me and comes right into me and kisses me right on the lips.
Whoa!
Whoa!
Did you give him a holy punch in the nose?
Boy, I was really taken back by that. And they're all kissing each other there, and I'm like, whoa, you know, are we being a testimony or a walk here, you know? But they did that, you know. I never, you know, I knew ahead of time if that ever came again, I got my guitar out there. Hi, brother.
Put with a spike on the end.
I didn't like it.
Yeah, hopefully I think a holy hug
is okay. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Can you believe that?
Well, a lot of people do that in Europe.
Yeah, customary.
Like they do that. They do like a lip kiss. On
yeah, they do. Some of them do it on the cheeks. Some of them.
Yeah, but on the lips. I mean, he really nailed me a good one too. I mean, it was wet and nasty.
Well, I can say, Gene, I've never had an experience before.
He gets old and loses all his memories. He will still have them.
Oh man, that was awful. I got his, you know, I got his picture right there.
Burned in.
Yeah. But, you know, he's addressing these folks, his countrymen here, and he's trying to have some goodwill. He's trying to show some goodwill. He's not going to be writing to scold them and correct and rebuke and all of that. No, he's trying to let them know in the beginning that he's writing out of a good heart, out of goodwill, out of care for them. And that's why they give these salutations. So he's, like it tells us in Ephesians, we're to speak the truth. How? In love.
Oops, sorry.
So he just prepared them for what he's going to be instructing them as a servant himself, not being as a lord over God's heritage, which elders are instructed by Peter not to do. All right, so verse 2, my brethren, and verse 3, count it all joy when you fall into diverse or various temptations, knowing this verse, that the trying of your faith works patience. All right, so he begins with my brethren, and again, we already talked about that, as Jews, but also in a spiritual sense, because he's writing to brethren who are Christians. And that makes them brethren as well, doesn't it? Not just because they're Jews or like we would have Americans. Count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. So John Gill says that these are not temptations just that are hard, difficult, disappointing. These are temptations as a result of being persecuted and being afflicted. However, as we go on in the first chapter, he does switch back to the temptations that are the normal run-of-the-mill temptations that we have in life. But I thought it was a good point because he is writing to those who are scattered out there among the foreigners, and they probably are being persecuted. So anyway, he says this isn't a matter of joy. Don't count it joy when you're tempted by the devil. He said that's a matter for grief. Okay, well, I'm listening. Okay. So the afflictions and persecutions they were getting were not, according to John Gill, were not the temptations to sin. He says these are temptations of, as a result of persecution and affliction. So there we can go to the Sermon on the Mount, where it says, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Blessed are those. Happy are those. And when men revile you, persecute you, you are to count that as a real privilege and joy, and great will be your reward in heaven for that. All right. Well, then there's the other kinds of temptations, like when God tempted Abraham and told him to take his son up to Mount Moriah and sacrifice him there. Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. How come Abraham, he never questioned the Lord? He never said anything? He took Isaac to Mount Moriah, was ready to thrust his knife in him. I've never heard of such a thing. I mean, he should have said, but Lord, you said this was the promised seed. And remember, I tried through Hagar to get that, and that didn't work. You said it had to be through Sarah. And now he's the only son through Sarah that I have. Right? Isn't that what he should have debated with the Lord about? I mean, what about the covenant you gave me that's going to follow me and my son through Isaac. Wow. Amazing that he had such obedience. So God tries his people, not that he might know what their faith is, because he already knows everything and he knows what kind of faith we have, but rather that his grace might be made manifest to others. We'll be talking about that. Well, Abraham's faith, we're talking about it. It was a great testimony to us of obedience, isn't it? I mean, it's a magnificent example to us. Wow. What a testimony. MacArthur says, even the world notices the difference between genuine believers and those who merely profess faith in Christ. So what do you think he's leading up to here? How can the world see the difference? Bzz, time's up.
Good works.
Well, this can be seen especially during difficult times. When severely tested by hardships and disappointments, one can determine the genuineness of faith. Oh. And then we can look at the parable of the sower. Remember the parable of the sower? And he throws out the seed on the stony ground, and it has a little bit of soil, and so it the seed comes up, but as soon as the sun comes out, then immediately it shrivels and dies. And then Jesus gives the explanation to the disciples about that. Some people receive the gospel gladly at the first, but then when trials and hardships come in their life, they fade away, and the seed, and they end up not producing any fruit. Well, we'll find that in Mark chapter 4. And of course, there were the seeds who fell on good ground, who heard the word, and they persevered and held on to the word and brought forth fruit. But everyone in the world endures trouble. As Job says, man is born into trouble
as
the sparks fly upward. That's a good description.
Yes.
And he also says in Job 14:1, he's got another
Job 14 verse 1.
And Paul, you can be prepared to read John 16, verse 33. And James, how about 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 8? And honey, you can look up 2 Timothy 3:12. Ready?
Yes, Job 14.
8:1
Man who is born of a woman is few of days and full of trouble.
Dang.
Well, there you have it.
That's pretty blunt, people.
Yeah. And as God's children, we're not free from that, are we? We're not exempt. The disciples were told that they would have to suffer for Christ and they would have trouble in this world. The apostle Paul, I'll have John 16:33 for the disciples.
These things I have spoken to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation. But be of good cheer, I have overcome the world.
But what he promised them was tribulation, right? And what did the Apostle Paul say?
We'll find out. He said, We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not driven to despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed. Oh, I went past it.
Yeah, but he's got the list there. You know, in other words, life was not easy for the Apostle Paul, but he overcame in those difficult times.
What verse is that?
2 Corinthians
4, 8, and 9.
Yeah.
2 Corinthians what?
Chapter 4, 8, and 9. Verse 8 and 9.
And we can expect trouble just because we're Christians in the world. What does he tell Timothy?
Yea, and all that will live godly, Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution.
Yeah, that verse is often quoted, isn't it, by people? All who live godly. In other words, if we're showing who we are or our faith is, and people know who we are, they're going to give us trouble. Okay, the emphasis of this book is that if a person's faith is genuine, it will prove itself during times of trouble. That's what we're looking at. Faith that is reliable only when things are going well is not saving faith. Whew. Genuine faith will sustain us in those times. So MacArthur lists 8 purposes for the Lord allowing trials to come into the lives of his people. Number 1, to test the strength of our faith, to discover whether in these trials how we respond or how weak we might be.
Real quick. So God knows the quantity, quality, if you will, of our faith.
Yep.
He probably knows how we're going to respond, right?
Oh, yes. He
so,
definitely
I mean, I'm guessing he knows all.
Yes.
So is this, so when you say this, or MacArthur says this, is this more of a, when we go through it, we're understanding about our faith more?
Yes.
Than,
yes. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not for God's benefit.
To figure out.
Yeah, to see where
I wonder.
People are.
Yeah,
but he sends them to us for so that we'll see. Well, we have weak faith, you know, or we're not responding well, whatever. God does that frequently. You might remember King Hezekiah, a tremendous king, right? Victorious, following God's commandments, renovating the whole nation, you know, bringing them back to the Lord, and they're winning their battles miraculously, and God is with them. But then God left a little test for Hezekiah when he got sick, and of course the Lord healed him. But remember, there were people that came from Babylon to visit him. And when the prophet came and said, well, what did you show these guys? What did you tell them? Oh, I showed them everything I told them.
The keys under the mat.
Yeah. He said, well, Hezekiah, you didn't do well by doing that. The Lord was, it says right there in the context that the Lord let that experience there for Hezekiah to show him that he was lacking in that area. During trials, if we call upon the Lord, asking him for help, asking for endurance and so forth, it would show us that we have a stronger faith. Number 2, trials are given to humble us. Well, that certainly works out, doesn't it? But we are prone to think that God's blessings are due sometimes to our own abilities and accomplishments. And God has to step in there and show us that we need him to have success. And let's see, Lydia, how about 2 Corinthians 12:7 on that one? The Apostle Paul again. He was humbled.
Lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure.
Yeah. So Paul knew why he was being humbled, right? He knew why he had that terrible trial and physical suffering. It was so that he wouldn't be overly exonerated and exalted. Third, God allows us to suffer trials in order to wean us from our dependence on worldly things. Well, we get caught up with our life here on in the world. It's the only life we've ever experienced, right? And we get caught up with things. We accumulate things. We learn. We get certified. We get good in an area and experienced, and we get recognized for what we do here and all those kind of things, and we tend to forget who we really are and where we're going and what our duties are. So Moses is a good example there, who was raised in Pharaoh's house, and yet he was humbled and when he killed that Egyptian and had to flee for his life and was out in the desert then for 40 years. He had to raise the sheep and all that kind of thing. Number four, God gives trials to call us to eternal and heavenly hope so that we straighten up our priorities again and realize that life is short and these trials are in our life to remind us that we're only here for a short time and then we'll be going to heaven. We have that heavenly hope. We look forward to being with the Lord. Number five, the purpose of trials is to reveal what we really love. What is our true priorities? And God is always leaving things in our life to test us about that. You know, you might remember after Joshua killed all of the enemies of the Lord, but he always left a few. Always left a few Moabites and the Amorites and the Canaanite here to test them, to see if they would follow him. Okay, well, he tested Abraham's willingness. Boy, he came out well on that one. Number six, trials are given to teach us to value God's blessings. Through trials, faith tells us to value the spiritual things of God. So, when trials come, we get sick, we're in bed or whatever, and we're considering our lives or whatever. And we're then usually led to more prayer, more reading of the Word, looking to the Lord for strength. Seven, the Lord uses trials to develop in His saints enduring strength for greater usefulness. And I like His little saying here, the worth of a soldier is never known in times of peace. Right. So, and Paul's testimony there. Paul, how about reading 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 10? Yeah, he's always using these trials to conform us to the image of His Son, who is made perfect through His suffering. So.
Is
2 Corinthians 12, verse 10.
Almost there.
Okay.
Okay. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong.
Yeah, he was more useful because of the trials, infirmities, persecutions, afflictions. He even said, I take pleasure in those things. That's pretty foreign to us, isn't it? We take pleasure in the trials that God sends in our lives. Well, he did because he knew that God was working in him a more useful character in his future ministry. He valued them. Count it all joy, it says. Well, if we see the purpose of these trials, then maybe we could realize that we could count them with joy, realizing that God is using these things to humble us, to build us, to wake us up, to make us more useful. Okay, James gives five key means for persevering through trials. And the first one is a joyful attitude. Second, an understanding mind. A submissive will. A believing heart. And a humble spirit. And then that takes us through verse 11 and then in verse 12. He tells us of the reward for perseverance. So the first means is a joyful attitude. He says, count it all joy. Unmixed, pure joy. Complete joy. Total joy. Fullness of joy. In trials.
I'm just going to confess. I don't think I'm there yet.
I haven't arrived.
Well, not, but I want to.
Joseph is a good example for us. Remember, his brothers left him to die and then ended up selling him to the Midianites. And then they figured they'd never have to see him again, that they'd probably kill him there in Egypt. But God prospered him so much. And in Joseph's mind, and he ends up in prison for something he didn't do. And through all of that, though, he kept a good attitude. And he, you know, in the end, he realized that God used all of that to save the Israelites. Jacob had, you know, was saved, and all the Jews, so the seed of Jacob, they were all saved because Joseph was sent there by his brothers in a very unusual way. But he said they meant it for evil, that God meant it for good. That was his attitude. You know, don't worry about it, guys. You know, they were always so afraid of him. And he said, you don't need to be afraid because don't you see the hand of God? He saved our family through this. And, of course, we have that verse in Romans 8:28. All things work together for good to them who love God and who are of the call according to his purpose. So we are not just to act joyful. You know, there are Christians who like to act joyful. And I was really in that mode there when I got out of the army, and I was so zealous with my new faith. And I returned to the First Baptist Church in Salem, Oregon. And Louis Inks noticed my zeal, and he called me and Don Nagel into his office and said, you know, Halbert Baptist Memorial Church needs a youth pastor, and we'd like to send you two guys there to fill that position. So we did that. And during that youth pastoring experience, it was all to make make these kids happy. You know, that's what they do. You know, they have good, clean fun. And so, you know, we would go skating, we'd go to the beach and fly kites, and we'd have picnics and, you know, on and on and on, all that stuff. That's what youth pastors, you know, that's what we did.
That's still
we thought we were doing what should be done. And everybody's smiling and laughing and having a good time, and you know. But what was their real condition, right? Their heart condition. You know, we were just acting. And those things are short-lived. Job says, the joy of the hypocrite is but for a moment. Well, you know, normally we think of the, you know, a hypocrite in a very negative way. I was just thinking that in the sense that a hypocrite is one who acts, right? They're actors. And, you know, in my youth pastoring, we were acting. We were just, you know, it wasn't a reality. It was a surface thing. People seek satisfaction and happiness in worldly enjoyments. Ecclesiastes says, and whatsoever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, any earthly joy. Right? It was all vain, but he tried it all, right? And his answer to all of that was, it's all vain. But people still are trying to find happiness that way, are they not? Proverbs 14:13, even in laughter, the heart is sorrowful, and the end of that mirth is heaviness. So, you know, we read about people, celebrities, who we think have got the world by the tail and they're happy and they've got it all, and then they commit suicide or something, or, you know, their life is a wreck. They're on drugs or something, right? This happens all the time because it's all just a mirth. It's not a true joy. And it can't be sustained. But as believers, we can be genuinely joyful. Count it all joy when you fall into various temptations. Well, if our faith is genuine, then even our worst troubles can be a cause for joy and thanksgiving. If we're, you know, we're thinking about and rejoicing. Colossians 1:11, where did we end up?
I haven't read anything yet.
Okay. All right, Colossians 1:11. Yeah, I think we did end there. And Pat, how about 1 Peter 1:7?
Being strengthened with all power according to his glorious might for all endurance and patience with joy.
Yeah. So when times are rough and we need to be long-suffering, we can actually be that way with joy. That's a real challenge, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is.
I'll be honest with you. In my life, the trials that occur to me, you know, if something happens to me, you know, I smash my thumb with a hammer or something, mm-hmm. and I'm immediately angry. I respond with anger. I'm not thinking. I don't take time to think, you know, why am I having this trial? You know, I would just could stop the immediate bad response. Maybe I could have a good response.
I mean, it is painful.
It is painful.
I've done that one
before. Yeah, I'm good at that one. I did that this week.
I think it's nice, like, I had no idea what it would be like to be Susan on all these different diets and she couldn't eat any food. Mm-hmm. And then when I have that, now I understand. You know, we have a lot more understanding of people's afflictions and empathies, which, you know, if you're out there in perfect health running around, you can't understand that sickly person at all.
Jen is getting that right now with having a baby. This before we met, and she'd always be like, I'd never, and I would, and you know, all these platitudes, yeah. And I would joke and say, oh, it'll be different for us. Don't worry, it'll be different. Yeah. And now she's experiencing these hardships, and now we have these talks now. She's like, I get it now. I understand. Mm-hmm. And I go, isn't it humbling? I mean, to walk in someone else's shoes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm above that. I've done that too. But you know, to see from that side, because I remember her doing all that, so I'm like, I don't know. I think it's going to be hard.
Well, in Corinthians, he says that we can comfort those with the comfort of the Lord. Yep. We've been comforted. And when we've gone through trials of losing people, dying, we could comfort people that are going through the same thing. And, you know, if you've never experienced losing somebody, you're close, and you don't know what it's
That's
like.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. See, I get to cross out that section.
No. Sorry. Yeah.
We knew a couple, though, that didn't have kids, and they were really, you remember them, they were really critical of our kids in so many ways. And they were loud in church and about all these different things. And they finally had children, and their kid was the loudest kid I ever heard.
So God does have a sense of humor.
Well, they're the worst kids. We all endured.
But I think of Wes and Beth too. You know, if they hadn't had Andrew, they would have kind of been that way, not really understood what it's all about.
You're more critical unless you go through it, for sure, you know.
Yep. Okay, we can be gentle. We have 1 Peter 1:7.
And I think that going through those things brings us joy, future joy, I think, going through them, looking back. 1 Peter 1:7, so that the testing genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes, so it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. The trying of our faith. More precious than gold. So Peter, he saw this himself. And we have the Lord himself for our example. Hebrews chapter 12. So, one of the commentators thought the greatest part of that joy would be the result of the trial drawing us closer to the Lord, that our prayer life would increase, we'd be more into the Word and seeking the Lord because of that. Are you there?
Yes, Hebrews 12, right?
Okay, Hebrews 12, verses 2 through 4.
We can help him out with that.
Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your soul.
Yeah.
You have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin.
And verse 11.
Verse 11. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it.
Exercised, yep. So, if the Lord knew that all of the suffering that he went through had the purpose of salvation, right? That was the joy that was set before him. Well, isn't that the same with our trials? If we know that all of the trials that we have to endure are for our good, to mold us into the image of Christ and build character, and in the end will bring a great rejoicing and victory in a crown of life, as a matter of fact, one of the verses says. That would make a difference in the way we think about them, wouldn't it? They're for our good. Well, the Apostle Paul is another example of that. You know, James, read Acts chapter 16, verses 24 and 25. And Jan, Philippians 4, verses 11 and 12.
Acts 16, 24 and 25.
Yep.
Right. Having received this order, he put them into the inner prison and fastened their feet in the stocks. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the prisoners were listening to them.
Yeah, so we know the story, right? They were thrown in there for preaching the gospel, and they're in, who knows what treatment they got in that prison. I'm sure it was horrible. Torture, you know. And yet there they are singing with joy unto the Lord. Isn't that something? What an example that is. And Philippians?
Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatever state I am in, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me.
Yeah. So he was a man who learned those things, right? He learned that a little suffering would bring great glory to the Lord. And, of course, we looked at that verse earlier where he said he count that was those trials even as a pleasure to him. Because he would fellowship with the Lord in his suffering. Remember that? We have Colossians again, chapter 1, verse 24. And Cindy, Philippians 2, verse 17.
Who now rejoice in my sufferings for you, and fill up that which is behind of the afflictions of Christ in my flesh for his body's sake, which is the church.
Okay. How did that start again? Who now rejoice in my sufferings for you, and fill up that which is behind of the afflictions of Christ. Rejoice. He's rejoicing in his sufferings. That's really amazing, isn't it? And because he recognizes that he's filling up the afflictions of Christ. In other words, he's following what Christ was afflicted for himself, for the salvation of the souls that will be redeemed.
I remember another place that said that when he suffers, the power of Christ rests upon him.
Mm-hmm. That's a good verse. Yep. And Philippians 2:17.
Even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all.
Yeah, here he's, you know, they might kill him there, right? He's in prison. He doesn't know what they'll do with him. And yet he's glad and rejoicing with them, even if he would be sacrificed. All right, one commentator says, if we value comfort more than character, then trials will upset us. That's well said, isn't it? If we value the material and physical more than the spiritual, we will not be able to count it all joy. If we live only for the present and forget the future, the trials will make us bitter, not better. Well, there is that we have to have that future, don't we? Of all of these things happening to us, are God's sovereign will for us. And so we will submit to them. Count it all joy when you fall into various temptations.
You mean if, right?
Huh?
You mean if? Oh, when? Oh. Okay.
Not a possibility, right? But an inevitability. It will. We will all be tested. Okay, with various hardships, problems, difficulties, whatever the nature or severity, trials are meant to test a believer's faith. And though trials begin as an external problem, they inevitably turn into an internal problem. They become a heart. It shows us what our where our hearts really are, right? How are we responding from the inside?
I think that's what you and I have been talking about for the last couple of weeks with my circumstances, and that's one of the things I realized.
Yeah.
It's my reaction.
Yeah.
You know, maybe.
Yeah.
So I thought about it.
I did think about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
So it is the internal effect of trials, meaning the way we respond to them, that involves our faith. So whether it's financial, sickness, disappointment, criticism, in-laws, our response to them reflect our spiritual condition.
It wasn't so good.
Man, I tell you, James is really practical. But we don't hear this much, do we? I mean, we have heard this before. But we need to be reminded,
no,
right?
Because now they're saying this is our best life now. I think of that verse, you know, he said, if we have hope in Christ in this life, we're all men most miserable. If we don't have that eternal hope, we are miserable. Because you go through life with all these trials, and then you think, oh, well, I finally got kids raised, and you get old, infirm, sick, you know, and you think, well, what's the use, you know? Because our hope is in Christ, you know. It's not here. Because if it is here, you're going to be really miserable.
Yeah. Yes.
A few joys here and there, but miserable mainly, you know.
We look forward to these to breaks of comfort and ease and things like that, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we really do seek comfort seriously.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big deal with us. To be comfortable.
Yeah. Really my bed. Yeah. So many beds are not comfortable. I can't stand them. And so now I'm stuck with one I don't like and I have to keep it because it costs a lot of money.
What are you talking about? What?
Mattress. When she
oh,
had her
oh.
back surgery.
Are you counting?
We had to get a new bed.
Mark chases me daily over that, you know.
One of the things that happened when she broke her ankle, you know. Uh-huh. Was the bed. We had a really old, what, 50-year-old bed. I mean, you wouldn't...
Wow.
This thing, just the old spring mattress.
Wow.
Know? And, you know, you can't imagine.
I liked
imagine.
It, though.
She liked the bed. But when Paul and I got her in the bed, after, well, off of the floor, and got her in the bed, then she felt nauseated, and she reached out for the...
Basket, her, little basket.
Yeah, her little
waste basket,
and fell, you know, because the mattress just on the end
wasn't doing its job.
Yeah, wasn't, she just fell out of there. So that you know, we're all like, "That's it," you know.
Or go in the store.
We're not letting you have this bed anymore. And what? 17 beds later, we're still not happy. But,
we got to go to the mattress store.
We bought a $4,000 mattress.
But, you know, you have to get up on the with a ladder
that's
to get
not
on
me.
It because it's this wide, you know. It's so big.
You got to knock the legs up when you're it. You know, the little platform just
yep.
right on the ground.
Yeah. Stay on the floor.
That's all I need. I have to say, Lord, I have to endure this, don't I? Not complain anymore.
Knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience.
Well, most people sleep on the ground, so I can be thankful for that. You know?
There you go.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, there's no such thing as golden years anyway.
Knowing this, so everybody knows this.
We all know.
We know that if we endure the trials, that God will enlarge our patience and will draw closer to Him and be more Christ-like. So here's the reason why we should rejoice and count it all joy, because we know that it will work patience in us. The trying of your faith works patience. So we've got the two things now, when we are tried, that our faith is tested as for its genuineness, like gold tried in the fire. I think you read that in your verse there, yeah. So when we have a trial, it's God's just burning out the old part of us that He wants out. And produce patience. They produce patience. Romans 5:3. Who's next? I don't know who's next.
I'll do it.
All right. Romans 5:3, and Paul, Romans 12:12.
Romans 5:3. Not only that, but we rejoice in our suffering, knowing that suffering produces endurance.
Or patience, same thing there. That word is interchanged in the scriptures,
yeah.
Endurance and patience. Anyway, rejoicing, knowing. He's rejoicing because he knows that these things are going to work patience in him. Right? And 12:12.
Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadily in prayer.
Yeah, rejoicing in tribulation. Okay. It's a fruit of the Spirit. That's another word. One of the fruits of the Spirit is long-suffering. And that could be, translated as something of an endurance and patience, you know, long suffering with joyfulness. Same thing there. Fruit of the Spirit. So it's the opposite of impatience, agitation, irksome, discouragement, and being upset.
What was I looking for? Irksome, I love that one.
Oh, boy.
That was stuck in my head.
Yeah, so I, it's hard to be, like some people in my family were really irksome, You can't hardly get along with them, It's very hard.
We should start a club.
It's a Bible study.
Okay, later in the book of James, chapter 5, verses 7 through 11, and we'll end with Jan's verse, Psalms 40, verses 1 through 2.
James 5, 7 through 11.
Yep.
Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. As an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remained steadfast. You heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord,
how the Lord is compassionate and merciful.
Yeah, those are tremendous illustrations, the prophets. You know, we count them to be godly and greatly blessed of the Lord, yet they suffered a lot, didn't they, the prophets? Boy, they had really hard lives and lots of hard trials. And Job, of course, you can't beat Job for somebody who's been severely tried, you know. And so James says, consider these people so that you can be more like them.
I remember that Mr. Horatio Spafford wrote, "It is well with my soul." His four daughters drowned at sea when they were crossing with his wife, and then he wrote that song, "It is well with my soul."
Yeah. So there are some people who do this.
Lord, Mr. Berger, you know? Grace. It'd be hard. Oh, well.
I think we need to be reminded of these things more. I've really been, I've been so challenged by this, you know, this week and looking at this. Man, I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
I'm so old that I have time to repent and learn this or not. And then we'll end with this.
Psalms 41 and 2.
Yep.
I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock and established my goings.
Yep. So in all of David's trials, he waited patiently upon the Lord. And the Lord gave him tremendous victory then, didn't he? He really experienced that joy of having those trials in the Lord. He just recognizing what they're all about. They're from the Lord and therefore are good. And we should be glad to have them. Because if we didn't have them, what if we didn't have any trials? We wouldn't have any opportunity to grow and show our faith.
We wouldn't know much about the character of God either.
We would have no
his
character.
His compassion and long-suffering and other things. We wouldn't know that about him if we didn't have some trials.
I had a friend at our church.